Brian, I'd like to open tonight's June 13th, 2016 regular Othello City Council meeting. And I'd like you all to please rise for a short invocation. I'd like everybody to ask Heavenly Father to bless tonight's meeting, giving the council wisdom as we make decisions that affect this community. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Also, I would like to just take a brief moment of silence in honor of the tragedy that took place in Orlando. Amen. So we move to item 1.4, which is the roll call, and I see that all council members are present. So we'll move to item 1.5, citizen input. Is there any citizen here tonight who would like to address the city council? Please raise your hand. I recognize you, and you have up to 5 minutes after you state your name and address for the record of the microphone. Is there anyone here? Okay, hearing none. I'd like to move to the approval of our agenda tonight.
Make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 3 is our consent agenda. I'd entertain a motion to approve our consent agenda tonight.
Make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Moving to current business, item 4.1 is police accreditation. And Chief Shank, you have a report for the council. Actually, some very good news.
Very good news. Thank you, Mayor. And I'm actually going to have Sergeant Aaron Garza speak on this. But because of the extraordinary work that he's put into it, I'd like to actually give him one of the chief's challenge coins. And you guys have seen me given a few of these, and I actually looked up the history of this so that I could share that with you, because you see this, but you don't really, I didn't really know the history. And I think General Ferris would know it probably from the Air Force quite a bit. But World War I was the first challenge coins, is from what I can tell, other than the Romans, and I'm not going to go back to the Romans. But in World War I, a lieutenant gave the pilots in his unit challenge coins. These were the first ones. One of them was shot down over Germany and made it back to the French line where they were going to execute him. Well, the Germans had taken all, when he was a prisoner, had taken all of his identification, had taken everything, but they left the challenge coin that was hanging around his neck. Well, they were getting ready to execute him in France because they thought he was a German. And then he showed them their challenge coin, and that saved his life. So that's, you know, from what I can tell, some of the history of one of these. So I'm going to ask Sergeant Garza to come on up here. And when we're all done, Mayor, I'd like a picture with you and Sergeant Garza and myself with us.
There you go.
Thanks again. Thanks, Chief. Good evening, council members. So just to touch a little bit on what accreditation is, basically the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chief have comprised what they believe are the best practices, policies, and procedures a police department should be taking or should be doing. And what they have done is, in this compilation of information, they've divided into certain standards. There's 131 different standards, and the way an agency attains accreditation is that their agency has to go through a comprehensive analysis against these standards, and they have to meet each one of every standards. And these standards range from administrative duties, such as making sure performance appraisals are being done, periodic review of the budget, to field duties, such as making sure police have the right equipment, right gear, or are handling the specific types of calls in a specific way. So we had our assessment earlier this year, and our assessment revealed that we were in compliance with every single one, 131 standards, 100%. We had zero non-compliance issues. In essence, we received a perfect score, 100%. So as for me, that's something I'm very proud of, being the manager. So it was good. But what does that mean? What value does it create for our agency and for our city? What it does is, what it creates is that every time an officer goes to a call, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a noise complaint, something small, or something big, such as an assault or something like that, the officers that are going on duty answering these calls are going out there following the most current and best policies, practices, and procedures. So what it's demonstrating is that Othello Police Department is providing an excellent police service to our citizens, and that's what we're about. It's our duty to serve, and that's exactly what we're providing. And attaining accreditation, receiving this award, is merely just a testament to that. We have a great staff, we have great officers, and receiving this award is just acknowledging what we've been doing all along, and that's providing excellent police work to our citizens. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Sergeant.
Sean, can I have one thing?
Yes.
Please. You know, as your boss's boss, I'm tremendously proud of Aaron and the work they've done. I'll tell you why, because in my previous life, we went through many, many inspections from the IG and people like that. The amount of work that goes into those, you don't appreciate it until you've gotten into it and done it. It's a tremendous amount of work going over paperwork. It's just, you know, it makes you go cross-eyed. And to get 100% on all 131 items is an amazing accomplishment. So to appreciate that, you sort of got to live it, but I'm trying to let you know how big a deal it really is. So, Aaron, great job.
Thanks.
This is a back-plated moment. I look forward to paying more attention. So we actually have a couple of these on the walls. This is 4 years to go through the process all over again.
Thank you again, Police Department, for the excellent work you guys do for our city. We'll move now to item 4.2. Travis has a contract for the city to consider with regard to the hearings examiner.
Nope. Good evening. Several months ago, I came forward with a request to do a request for proposals for hearings examiners. We were given authority, we did advertising, we went out and did 3 interviews of potential hearings examiners. The city has had hearings examiners since 2009, but they've always been under an informal agreement, and so we formalized this, or we're trying to formalize this with a contract. So it's a proposed 2-year contract with Andrew Cottenkamp, who is out of Wenatchee. And that's the document that you have before you tonight. And the question before you tonight is, really the only question left at this point, and that is, Mr. Cottenkamp has proposed a $1,000 flat hearing fee. Currently, what the city has is we have a $700 deposit that is collected for each hearing. And we actually do a cost recovery. So if we end up spending $5,000 worth of his time, then ultimately the applicant is billed $5,000. On the other hand, if we only use $250 worth of his time, the applicant only pays the $700 deposit, and the rest of that goes towards the planning department's costs to cover the hearing. So the one significant change now is a flat fee. And if you're not interested in that, he has a billable hour rate, but because he is out of Wenatchee, we would have to pay him time to actually drive here. It's a reduced rate. I believe it's about $65 instead of his normal $125. But that would normally be rolled into a single hearing cost if that's what we want to do. So there's the predictability. It's a little more, but it's predictable versus an hourly rate, which might be less. So, do you have any questions for me?
instead of per $1,000 fee, is that per transaction?
Per hearing. So that's his, so I would prepare my staff report as normal. I would send it to him if he's going to review a conditional use permit and a subdivision and a planned unit development. It's a single staff report. It's a single $1,000. It's a single hearing. But if we have applicant Joe and applicant Dave, we would collect $1,000 from each one of them, even though he may only come one day and do both of them at the same time. It would be a flat fee per project.
Counsel?
So what you're saying is it's going to be covered. The fee for him is covered by the applicants that are filing for the...
Yes.
So it pays for the hearing, it pays for...
If it goes to hearing examiner, you know, not everything goes to hearing examiner. We've had a few recently, but it's only if it goes to hearing examiner.
And we were doing a cost recovery where it could be a $5,000 bill or a $700 bill, whatever.
For example, when the sheriff's office came for the cell tower down there, just south of Highway 26, they came and we spent hours and hours arguing, and then we continued it to a next hearing so that we could gather more information. Then we came back, and I'd swear we spent another 2 or 3 hours. So in the end, they ended up paying a lot more than they would have under this kind of... So it would be a flat fee for a single hearing, which will give us all incentive to take care of it one time. There is, I guess I should clarify, that there also is a caveat that says if we have to go to a second hearing, that there would be an additional fee at cost recovery for that second hearing. So the incentive is to come prepared and get it done the first day.
So this, in essence, could save our, the people, the applicants, some money in the long run.
It
even
is
though
a,
it's a little bit more... In the long run, it could save them some money.
It is a predictable cost.
Okay.
Council, I need a motion to authorize the administrator to sign this contract.
Actually, if I may interject. So I was looking at this today, and I wanted to be able to get up here in time to talk to Travis earlier before the meeting, but I had a little bit of car issues. But in any event, there's a couple provisions in here. I think... And it doesn't have anything to do with the payment provisions you were talking about. So I think I'll go over what they are. But I think an acceptable measure would go would be to authorize execution of the agreement, subject to some changes that I can discuss that I would suggest.
Okay. Do that.
The first one is on page 6, which is kind of the low-hanging fruit. But on paragraph 17, for applicable law and venue, if there's any dispute arising out of this contract has venue set in Chelan County rather than Adams County. In all our contracts, we have strived to keep jurisdiction in Adams County. So we would likely want to do that here. I would suggest doing that. Again, provision we probably will never need to use, hopefully, but if we do, we'd want to have it here in Adams County. Also, the contract doesn't have an prevailing party attorney's fees provision for any dispute arising out of this agreement. Again, that's something else I would suggest that we add. Something that is a little bit more, garner a little more discussion is the indemnification provisions on page 5. It has the standard indemnification of course, this contractor, the hearing examiner, would indemnify the city for any action against the city to the extent it arises out of his wrongful conduct. And then we have, of course, the city would indemnify the hearing examiner for any damages or any claim against him that arises to the extent it arises out of the city's wrongful conduct. However, there's another provision in here which states that the city would indemnify the hearing examiner for any action against him that arose out of his decisions that he made as a hearing examiner in the normal course. Now, if that's a risk the city wants to take on, that's fine, but I think it was worth pointing out that that is a liability the city's taking on. So essentially, as if you know, he was a city employee, and we were going to be responsible for his decisions, which is not the traditional independent contractor relationship that the city would have with an independent contractor. So those are, otherwise the contract is fine. But when I was reviewing it today in preparation for the meeting, those were the potential issues I saw that I think you guys should probably discuss and give us direction.
So I don't think the city wants to take on that additional liability, so I think we'll have that stricken and corrected in the agreement. So then I would need a motion to allow the administrator to sign this, authorizing the administrator to sign it subject to the changes proposed by the city, by our city council.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. Travis? And then, you're not done. We're going to move to item 4.3, Columbia Street Utility Corridor.
Thank you very much. I will try and fly through this because I'm due at the school board meeting, so we'll try and get through this quicker than usual. So what I wanted to talk to you today is something that was brought to the Streets and Utilities Committee the other day. It's about the Columbia Street Utility Corridor, and if you're familiar with all the activity that's going on down at this end of town at 14th and 26th, so we have Columbia Basin Health Authority with approval. We have Wahidas in this field right here. And then the red line represents the 14th Avenue project that's going on. And we are also dealing with Sagestone 8 and 9, which is Pete Olson's next project that he's looking at doing. And it's south of the existing Sagestone and Ashwood Notch projects. And the issue that we needed to discuss is there's currently a sewer line in 7th Avenue. I'm sorry, it comes up from Columbia over by Burger King and Dell's, comes over to 7th, and then it heads north on 7th. And it was recently completed across the Guadalupe Haven site here. In the gemstone alignment, and it comes all the way to 14th. So there's a lot of activity going on down there. And currently the issue is Wahidas is connected to a sewer manhole at the end of, Scutney. And then gemstone, there is a manhole that CBHA is trying to tie in at this location. The problem is that those are at such a height in the ground that they don't really serve a lot of development off to the east. So they're really kind of going to be the last users on those lines. So really, what we're thinking about from a strategic long-term point of view is there's a lot of land over there that needs sewer and storm disposal service, but they can't be reached by those lines. So we've identified this as a need, that we need the corridor between 14th and 7th. We need those water and sewer lines in those locations so that we can serve beyond these canals. Varel and Associates did a preliminary estimate of how deep in the ground it needs to be for us to get under these two canals over here, and that they believe it is feasible for us to hold this sewer line down and come up and actually serve all of this land over here that is west of Highway 17. So we're kind of wrestling with this issue of we have a user who wants to go to Gemstone and be the last one on the line versus we really need some partners here. So what we've done is we've determined that we need to enlarge those pipes and we need to make sure that that main is deep enough to get under the canals. But we also have this time constraint where CBHA has to have that sewer line in place this fall so that when they open next spring, that they're actually going to have sewer service to that site. So we have a couple constraints and challenges. So ideally what we've done is we've been working with the neighbors between 7th and 14th. This is Garza Enterprises, this is DDM Enterprises, the Michaels family, and then Pete Olson owns both of these properties here. We were encouraging Mr. Olson to work with them and come up with some kind of agreement, but they weren't able to quite hammer anything out. So we got involved, and we were talking to the Garza family, and we were asking them for an easement, and in return, Mr. Olson indicated that he would pay for the construction to get the pipes in the ground if the Garzas were willing to give us that easement, and eventually that would be right-of-way once the Garzas developed their property. However, as part of the conversation, the Garzas have said, look, we'll just give you your full-width right-of-way. They'll give it to the city rather than giving it to Mr. Olson. And Mr. Olson indicated that, yes, if we'll take that right-of-way, he will do the installation of the pipes in those ground. He is going to have to install the utilities across his property, but we needed this final stretch with the Michaels. And so these pieces started falling into place, and so what we actually worked out is this deal where the city would pay for the upsizing and the extra deep depth for the pipes. Mr. Olson is going to pay us to install these lines to go across his property, and he will dedicate us the right-of-way so that the pipes and the right-of-way is already there for his subdivision, before his subdivision occurs. And then for the Michaels, what we did is we worked out a deal with them where the city will install the sewer and the stormwater because we need it for the 14th Avenue project. In return, they are going to give the city the full-width right-of-way. So if we can get your authorization tonight, what we will end up with is a full length of right-of-way for the alignment that we need to put the sewer and the stormwater. We will have water from 7th to the end of the Michaels property, but the Michaels will be responsible for the road construction and the water construction when they decide to develop their property. What we will have is a fully developed road as part of the Sage Stone, and then the Garzas will have water, sewer, and storm water in the ground, but we will not have the road surfacing there until the Garzas develop that. So it really is a partnership. The Garzas and DDM Enterprises will be dedicating right-of-way. Olson Homes will be dedicating right-of-way, and they will also be paying for their fair share of the frontage improvements. The city of Othello, for its part, is going to have to commit public money for the design and inspection work. The 14th Avenue contractor, who's currently out there, we expect to use them for the trenching and the utility installation. And so we will save some money and make sure that it's done to city standards and it'll be done under city supervision. And the city is essentially paying to upsize and pay for the mains to be future users available. And so if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer that.
So is this going to be gravity flow from east of the canal all the way down to 7th?
Absolutely.
No pump station there?
That's correct. So everybody all the way out to Highway 17, theoretically, should be able to fit into this one pipe, and it'll serve everybody for the foreseeable need future.
So where's the savings come in here, where you say here potentially covered by savings from some 14th Avenue projects? So where do you see the savings of $350,000 that the city is supposed to cover?
Okay, so the project is about $700,000. We haven't got a firm number from the firm because that's part of what we're seeking authorization to go through that. But Pete will pay for the construction costs for this property. It's probably about 55% of the cost will be covered by Pete for the main construction cost. There is a 14th Avenue project, and it includes a stormwater facility that is going to be under the bed of road, under the bed of the road. It is essentially a stormwater burrito where it goes in there and it's supposed to trickle into the ground. The problem, of course, is the original design, we're worried about the feasibility of that, and that is if you put a pipe in the ground with holes in it to drain water, the reality is the groundwater is more likely to infiltrate into the stormwater system than it is actually to infiltrate out. So right off the bat, we believe that there's kind of a design flaw that we need to address. So the amount of money that we will save from installing that stormwater system will instead go to pay for the stormwater, a portion of that stormwater pipe that'll go across the Michaels property, which will theoretically connect to the Olson property. And so part of it is going to come. We don't know how much we'll be able to squeeze out of the grant, but some of it, there's that nexus there that we'll be able to pay for as much of that as we possibly can.
So is anything coming from CBHA?
So CBHA has not. I've contacted them, and I let them know that this is a pretty big commitment by the city's part, and we are taking on part of this responsibility because we need to make sure that that line is there and available for them to hook up to. So I've asked them for $50,000. Unfortunately, I don't have that hammer to make them pay. But hopefully they're going to be willing to pay for that mitigation or mitigate part of their impact that's driving this.
This will also force CBHA to live up to their agreement that if there's sewer and water available, they need to develop that sewer and water to the end of their first two lots there. Go back to that big picture of CBHA. We've got right there. So it's about right. Yeah, right about there, they have to develop there. When they develop the other half of the property, they have to finish that sewer and water and road, by the way. But that's the agreement we've made with them that they're going to do. It's just to force them to do that, as opposed to trying to tap into the sewer manhole there at
Gemstone,
which we're not sure. I don't think Travis mentioned this. We're not sure the capacity of Gemstone to handle once they're fully up and running with all the patient load next fall. So we're concerned about that. As far as saving money, maybe I was trying to read where you saw we won't save $350,000. We're going to save some money, but not $350,000. But what it does, it helps, as Travis very succinctly pointed out, helps the city develop. And we've been talking about trying to do some, developer city partnerships that are mutually beneficial to a lot of parties. This is beneficial to a lot of folks, CBHA, the city, Pete Olson, the folks that, the Michaels, the Garzes, the people that are out there in this, the other side of the canal and this side of the canal that will develop. It's a beneficial lot of folks.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so that's why we met with a couple of folks from the Sewer and Water Committee, Mark and John, last week. And, if they want to add anything that maybe forgot that we talked about. But that was pretty much the concept. I don't know if Mark had anything to add to that.
I just got to thinking more about that. Can we do that under the 14th Avenue contract? I mean, it's $700,000. That's...
Well, so in terms of, I talked to, we talked about this. And, essentially for our part, and the way I understand it, and Travis, correct me if I'm wrong, but is that what we're doing is we're taking the, there's a stormwater is provided for in the current 14th Avenue project. And so what we're doing is we're taking, instead of dealing it that way under the contract specs, we're foreseeing a problem, and so we're changing that. So there's going to be a change order to the construction contract to move the stormwater to treatment from that to that the DDM lot. And that's essentially what we're doing. And so for that portion, yes, under the contract, we have that. And in my understanding, again, Travis, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the rest of the costs are going to be paid by the private landowners.
A large portion of that, a large portion of that will be paid by Pete. However, we will also be using city funds to pay for the oversizing and the deepening of the pipes. But yes, the $350,000 figure is about what it looks like Pete is going to contribute to his portion of this. The city's portion of upsizing on the Garzas and the Olson property is going to be about $150,000. And then the portion on the Michael property I believe it's about comparable to what we would save for the stormwater savings for the 14th Avenue project. So there is that direct nexus between the stormwater infrastructure that we have planned versus what we realistically need. And once we make that connection from the in-ground system to the pipe, that pipe ultimately has to be connected to 7th Avenue. Otherwise, It won't infiltrate.
We're all clear. I think we're all clear on why we need to do it and what it's going to do for us as a city. So understanding that, I think what the question is this is being handled as a change order under an existing job? Because we're going to use the contractor from the existing job to avoid going to bid?
No. What we're avoiding is the installation of a stormwater system that would have to be replaced as soon as it was determined that it's failing. And so we believe, our new engineers believe the design is going to fail. Therefore, it's not a viable option to install in the first place.
That was, okay, so that's a change order. It changes the fact that what we had put together for engineering on 14th Avenue is not going to work. So this will work.
For the stormwater.
For the stormwater.
Yes.
But when we were in the committee and we were talking about it, I was under the understanding that Pete was going to take care of what he had to do across his property. And for the additional things that we were requiring for the expansion out to the east, we would compensate him for that. But he was going to hire his own construction company and do his own work across his property.
Yeah. That was the original option, was we were going to pay Pete to do it, but he opted instead to have the city do it as part of the existing work that we already need to get done. So yes, yeah, so we had offered that, but since it's not viable for Pete to get that done, or Pete opted that it would be more efficient for him to pay us to do it since we already had the people on site.
Okay. So the contractor is going to be the contractor from the 14th Avenue job?
Let's say the mobilization cost and, you know, that sort of thing. So we're thinking coming at a reasonable price.
Okay.
It's advantageous. We think it's legal to do. Since he's already here, but I'll let Kelly weigh in on it.
Well, the one question I have, because my understanding was we were talking about stormwater, and so the sewer though. So we're getting there. We're going to be putting sewer in there as well. Is that correct? And was there going to be sewer? I mean, are we changing plans from the 14th Avenue project in terms of sewer, or just stormwater?
No. So the 14th Avenue for sewer will not change, because the 14th Avenue only involved, well, sorry. Yes, so they will be doing those in the same trenching activity. So it'll be the same crew installing both the sewer and the stormwater at the same time.
Right. But our sewer plans haven't changed from the 14th Avenue contract.
That's correct.
Okay. When do we need to make a decision by?
Well, yeah, pretty soon. Because unfortunately, we are going to have the utility crews out there doing the stormwater and the sewer work and the utility work in 14th Avenue. They're one of the first things to be done, because those all have to be underground before they start doing the road surfacing and that. So it is one of the first things that will be done.
Well, I certainly don't have, originally, my understanding is we were talking about, I mean, the sewer is kind of new to me, the sewer side of this. I was thinking we were talking about stormwater. And I certainly see the change. I mean, we can make a change order for the sewer, or I'm sorry, for the stormwater. The sewer side of things takes a little bit more analysis, because we're not changing it. I mean, there's not a change order that we're not changing anything in the original contract. It's a sewer. We're adding something entirely new.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I'd want to take a look at, because I got to be honest, I didn't look at the sewer part of it before, because I was only understanding stormwater is what we were moving.
So my question then back to you would be, if we're improving the sewer capability of 14th, which was part of the original plans to begin with, right, Terry, that we talked about that two or three years ago, and decided we couldn't afford it. Now we have this opportunity to improve the sewer access when people own 14th, i.e. CBHA. And so would that not count as a...
Depends on what, you really go off what was put out to bid.
Ah.
If I may weigh in a little bit, I think we are missing a little bit of the point is that the proposed connection to the sanitary sewer system at Gem Street is, from what I understand, a compromised place to put it. Again, from what I understand, there has been surcharging of the existing manholes, so during high events, the capacity of that existing facility can't handle what's there right now, let alone another facility with 300 employees plus all the beds. So when we started looking at some of those elements, we had a growing concern about just the flat capacity of your collection system. Also, during design, the intent was always to try to go south into Columbia, and we were kind of hoping that the Pete Olson thing would shake out, and we were able to do that. But we were, I mean, right from the initial comments on CBHA, the intent was to try to go south to the Columbia Avenue alignment. So I think stormwater is compromised, and it very well may be that sanitary sewers are impractical. So alternative.
So if what we're talking about is that the current sewer service at Gemstone is incapable or not able to handle the sewer capacity that we envisioned when we put together, the city put together the bid for the 14th Avenue project, and now we're seeing a greater need for sewer in addition to stormwater, and so we need to, so if we are in fact changing the design of the 14th Avenue project in terms of sewer, then I think we're okay putting both of them in there. So if the design guys and Travis are okay with making that call, then I think from a legal footing, I think we're okay.
And that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think if you guys know how long the 14th Avenue project's been going on, and I think that development of that project was precedes CBHA ever starting. So when they were going down those steps, I don't know that they anticipated a 300 employee health clinic being in, constructed, a $40 million health clinic being constructed alongside 14th Avenue at that time.
Just from a legal perspective, it's just important that we're amending what was already contracted for, and changing those plans of what was contracted for, and then we can proceed on all elements. So,
okay,
yeah.
In fact, the initial design does have the crossing for Columbia Street and the design to take the sewer both directions. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, there was also original design that included taking a sewer line south. That was eliminated from that design because we knew we would have Columbia Street to go to the east.
And the key, though, is what, for the contracting purpose, the key is what was bid.
So we all understand the importance of this and the fact that Olson is willing to put up his share. I mean, that's what instigated this whole thing to occur. But in the committee, in the presentation to the committee, which was me and Mark, you had another sheet that put up costs, and those costs were actually provided by Olson. And that's kind of what we're going by here with your presentation.
My question is,
if it's legally okay to go ahead and amend a contract that you've already got with an existing contractor, and you feel you can legally defend that, as any other contractor that comes in and says, I didn't get a chance to bid on that. And that's fine. But how are we going to handle the costing of the project for this work right now, today? How are you going to do that?
So part of what I'm asking today is for, I'm sorry, can you go to, I don't have my agenda memo in front of me, but specifically what I'm asking is authorization for staff to go forward and to determine what the determine what the options and what the costs, and to authorize us to proceed with trying to engage the consultant in that task.
Okay. Is there going to be a water main in there also?
It only, it stops part of the way up. According to your drawing, the water main only goes to a certain distance.
Yes, that's correct.
Well, why would we continue it?
Because there's no connection between the 14th Avenue and the water line. Technically, we don't have to build the water line. We could leave that for Pete to install by himself. And theoretically, you can authorize us to...
Well, you have it going, you have it shown going through Pete's property.
Yes, because that's what Pete is paying for.
But you just got done saying that Pete was, does not want to do the work himself, he wants to turn it over to the city to do.
Yes.
So we're going to do it.
He could do that himself.
He's going to pay us back for it.
Yes, because our contractor will be out there.
But what if we can continue it then through Michael's property and tie it into 14th Avenue?
Because the Michaels have no need for it, so therefore it would be, it would be an expenditure.
There's going to be future growth in that reef, in that area. Why not spend the money today at today's dollars instead of at 10 years from now dollars to get it done, and then have to redig the whole thing up again later?
Because that's got to be looped also, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So if it's just stops right there?
It'll go up to Gemstone, but it'll only be a deadline from, I think it's 11th, over to the Michaels property. So there is a short extension. Sorry, Spencer, can I go back to the map again? So the reason why we have the nexus at this point is because CBHA needs the sewer line and they need the stormwater line. They do not need the water line because their water comes from the other direction. So there will be water that comes down, I believe that's 12th, and so it will be looped both 12th, 11th, and it'll go over to 7th, so we don't need a loop over to 14th. That water line is not needed until the Michaels develop their property. Therefore, there's no nexus for us to use public funds. That would be considered a gift of public funds because they're just getting it for nothing. Whereas right now, we can spend the water in the sewer because there are clearly public goods for having that line expanded at this time, because CBHA can't proceed without that sewer connection.
Yeah, but the Michaels wouldn't own it. It's in our right-of-way. We're getting gifted the right of way by the Michaels. We own the water line, so that's not a proper thing to say. The city of Othello would own that water line. That would be ours. Okay?
Yes.
Anybody that wanted to attach to that water line, we're going to then charge them money to do so. Okay? Because that's the city water line. The question is, why didn't we finish it out?
We could. I just think that we don't necessarily have that legal nexus at this point. We very well could.
I don't understand what you're saying. That whole section of ground, all the way through there, from where it starts to where it finishes, is ours. We own it. It belongs to us. They're deeding it to us. It's the city's.
Yes.
We should be able to build anything we want on our property.
Yes. Yes, we could.
So there's no legal issue, right?
We could do that, but yes, so we would treat it like a capital project, a brand new capital project, and we're installing new infrastructure.
Ollie, what do you say?
Well, the legal issue isn't whether or not we can install something in that land if we own the right-of-way. Obviously, we can. I think the legal issue that Travis is talking about is whether or not we can do it through a change order on the 14th Avenue project. I think, again, water raises another issue. Whether or not we can do it through a change order is whether or not the contract that was put out for bid, or the project that was put out for bid, and the bid documents, whether or not we're altering the plan for water. You got to look at each three of these individually. Are we changing the plan for stormwater from the 14th Avenue project? Are we changing the plan for sewer? And are we changing the plan for water? know, that's, you know, on doing a change order. So is this a new public work, or is it part of the 14th Avenue project? I mean, that's the legal issue.
So this whole system from 14th to 7th, is this engineered at this time? Does Varela have it engineered? Okay, will that have to be done? That's what he's asking.
That's what this is about.
Okay.
So we have plans and profiles, so we know the elevations of the pipes and the manholes, but we do not have the exact specifications for the work.
One other thing too is we're trying to get this done before cross 14th, so we're not cutting a new road.
Yeah.
But still, if we don't put that water all the way there, we're going to be cutting the road.
The pipes will be in the ground. So the 14th Avenue already includes empty pipes for the sewer, the stormwater, and the water to go across
so
the road.
They'll be stubbed across.
Yes, so they'll be there. They'll just be empty and dry. Whereas this makes the storm and the sewer actually full pipes.
So from an engineering perspective, the only thing we've done is we have the alignment survey. There's off to the east, there's some of those drain pipes down in there. We had loader shot just to make sure that it's feasible to actually grab and serve that area to the east. And there's a preliminary alignment on Columbia, but we don't have profile or final plans from Peebles on where exactly that road is going to occur within his lot. But we want to check, you know, kick the tire a little bit before we go any further.
I want to get this done. I want to get it done. You know, I'm all for getting it done. I would like to continue the water line to connect it in. I don't want to leave things unfinished, but
one of the things
that can't be done under the change order.
I want to add something to this water line right here. DOH doesn't really like to see the city deadhead a water line like that, because our standards say loop water lines in the city. There's over 90 feet of dead line right there from 12th to the end of Olson's project right there. And we have 1,000 feet deadheaded to the port property right now that goes nowhere. We've got to go out and we actually got to blow it off. So if you're going to actually loop that water line, it needs to go to 14th as a complete water line, because looping 11th to 12th geometrically is a loop, but it's not fed from two sources. I can shut the pipe down and kill it. It really needs to come down and go from 7th all the way to 14th and go clear through so that you don't have a dead end line. That's what John's saying. It's true, because that'll just go sour on us right at the end if we don't maintenance that end of the pipe. The same way with the port project. We got 1,000 feet there that we have to go out and maintain until we can loop that line.
Okay, so you're bringing up several issues, and one of those is that what we can do within the confines of our 14th Avenue project. That almost sounds like a separate bid project, and maybe that's what we need to look at.
And that's, I assume that's what we could do if we wanted to, because as we discussed, you don't have to put the water line in the same trench as the sewer and storm, because the water doesn't have to be that deep. In fact, you probably don't want to put it there. In fact, was that not brought up that Olson didn't really want to put the water line in the same place because of the location of the fire hydrants and stuff? It may not be in the same place. Is that not correct? I'm misreading that. So that's something we can come back and do as a separate project now that we have the right of way. That's something we want to bid on, because it wouldn't be in the same trench. There would be no real cost savings. It's what my understanding is if we try to do it all at once. I mean, there'll be some because the guy's in place and we could do it. There'd be a little bit of cost savings for, I guess, for that. Yeah. But as Kelly just said, we probably have to go out for a separate bid on that, because there's not enough nexus with the 14th Avenue project. So, but staff can go ahead and research that and do it if that's something we want to look at. It wouldn't cost that much to do a water line, just a water line across there. We're not talking about a lot of money if that point, and we take it out of the water fund, and then it's in place, and like Terry said, there's some advantages to doing that. So what Travis is looking for here is, like he says in the thing, is an authorization to proceed and get real no-joke cost estimates, and we'll come back to you hopefully with the next session with, here's how much it's going to cost, and you guys say yes, no, whatever, go back and do it, and but we'll get some real cost estimates and say this is the money. What we'd like, we just needed, before we went any further and started going out for, hey, contractor, give us some real no-joke estimates, and, you know, engineering, how much is it really going to cost? We want a sense from the council. Yeah, great idea.
I think we need to get this done, but I think Kelly needs to check into if we can add that to that project or not, because when we did the well 9, that was a little bit different because it was an emergency, but we had the two, and one had to get separated out.
Well, and here, the sewer, the stormwater, for sure, and the sewer, and I got to rely on Travis and Kurt to this, and, you know, if we're deviating from the bid documents, the documents, the designs that actually went out to bid, then we can do a change order. The water, I think, is a weaker, you know, that's a stretch, I think.
Yeah.
No, but we can go out to bid on that.
Oh, you can go out to bid on that.
Yeah, I'm just talking about within the confines of the 14th Avenue project.
Okay, so then in order to expedite our meeting tonight, do you think we could go back with those three issues? We could go back with the, first of all, making sure that we're on solid footing. And right now there is speculation. So I would like you to confirm the information that you have is correct and that we can do a change order. Second, I think we need to authorize when you come back with that, we also have a little bit more definitive idea from Kurt what this is going to actually cost, and also what the cost for the water line estimate would be, and that way the council then could take action. Do you guys have a consensus with that?
Yes.
So in other words, no decision tonight other than to authorize staff to continue and bring back information in 2 weeks.
If everything lines up, can we go ahead and have a change order ready for you guys to vote on next council meeting? That way we can, you know, press.
That's what I want.
Okay. Just clarify.
So is that okay, Travis?
Yeah. The one thing I just wanted to clarify, and I may not have made this perfectly clear at this point, and that is, part of this partnership is that the Garzas are giving us the right of way because the line is going to be installed with them, and they have given us the deeds. We just can't record those deeds until we know that the project is going to proceed, because if Mr. Olson doesn't do his project and he doesn't pay for those pipes to go in the ground, then the Garzas will have given us something and gotten nothing in return. So part of this is the city has to recognize that if this doesn't all move together, excluding the water, so the water is a separate issue, and given the conversation, I've come to realize that if we can't get that nexus for the Michaels property, we should probably at this point just be telling Mr. Olson that he needs to install his own water line, and because we're not paying for any upsizing, so that should probably be his responsibility, because it's not time sensitive. The two time sensitive issues are the things that we have the nexus for the 14th Avenue. So,
okay, well, let's come back with some definitive direction then.
So we'll straighten
that
out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's move on to item 4.4, consultant agreement, transition plan, and pedestrian master plan. And Kurt.
Thanks, Mayor and Council. This is not a new topic. We talked about this, I'm going to say 14, 16 months ago. I think some of the driving forces have changed regarding this, but we have an opportunity here to go forward and get this done. And that's the transition plan. In 2014, you had GNO go out and do extensive survey of your existing ADA, your ramps, sidewalks, approaches, etc., and included almost 2,000 documented points. The purpose of this task is to prepare an ADA ramp. So we got 2,000 known points. Of that, there's almost 500 ramps. According to their documentation, 85% of those are out of ADA compliance. What was lacking from that is any kind of priority plan, map where they are. It was never taken to the next step and put into a final product that the city can use for prioritizing their ADA replacements. So in general, the scope of work that you're looking at has three primary purposes, and that is to take the addition or the existing data that you guys have, incorporate it into a map, start integrating it into your GIS city system. The second one is to go through and prioritize the replacement of those, so identify the ones that are, number one, the worst. Number two, they're in front of public facilities such as libraries, banks, schools, health clinics, etc. Map those priority replacement facilities. Start overlaying it with also the STIP. We're in next council meeting, you're going to be looking at your six-year transportation plan, but identify those ADA ramps that need to be updated with those priority transportation plans. And then the third one is to prepare a plan, the actual transition plan that is in conformance with the ADA federal standards, that documents the means and methods, the prioritization criteria, and the results. The plan will include narrative maps showing proposed project improvements, estimated costs, and schedule for those improvements, which includes ADA ramp reconstructions, signage improvements, ADA parking recommendations, etc. Currently, we have an intern that's going to be starting with us. She's a planner at Eastern Washington University. She attended several of the Planning Commission meetings last year. She has been working on this or something similar as a project in school, and our intent is to hire her and have her work with us in the city of Othello to get this completed this summer. Any questions?
So, Kurt, that binder you have there is that report, and there's no map at all. It's just a paper that says this ramp is not good, and that's...
We don't need to stop on this. We need to keep going.
Yeah.
We need to keep up with what we got started, and mm-hmm. we are having to deal with what we were left. Basically, that's what he's saying is, this is what we were given, and it's... You
know, it's just data points.
So the two committee members then recommend we go ahead and approve this contingent on funding.
We approve this.
Okay.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
We have a motion made and second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Kurt. We have a well-mined update on item 4.5. Terry, Public Works Director.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Council asked me to bring back some pictures of well number 9 from the construction that we've got, and so I did so here. Well 9 is located on 2.95 acres, fenced acres out there. It's pumping roughly 1,100 gallons per minute, 52 hertz currently. This is the area that we're talking about here. There's 13 total acres here, and right about here to here is the 2.5 that well 9 sets on. This is Highway 17, and down here is Cunningham Road. This is the coming in the entrance on the west side, looking south to the corner there. You can see we got transformer setting over here. This is quite a bit of open space here. It's gravel. This is the north view of the wellhouse entrance here. This is the west view. You can see that we have the wellhead right here. It isn't currently, at the time I took these pictures, the three-sided house isn't up over this yet, but it is currently now, so I'm missing that shot here. But you can see here's the control room and here's the chlorine room. We'll see in the other pictures that we have. This is the other side of the northeast side, a little better photo here. This is our discharge to waste to the pond. before it goes to the system. This is the south side. You can see the discharge pond here. Apologize for the weeds. These are all taken care of by now. This is another view of it looking west. This is the inside of the pump house here, and our piping from the well through here, clay valve. We've got a couple little fancy little gauges right here that tell us what our pressure is here across this pipe, and it comes out right here, and it's about a pound difference. Floor is painted, heat in the corner. This is the MCC panel for the controls on it. This is our display. It gives us all our readings currently here. This is kind of the operator side of it, the north side of the building here. You can see we got an air conditioning unit here, heater, a vent here, and then this is the telemetry cabinet right here that sends all the signals back to the computer at Public Works, tells us where we're at with the druck level, and so on. This is our chlorine room. We have a heater here, and we've got an exhaust fan here that runs clear down into this grate right here. It's a chlorine tank. The doors are open so you can actually get to it, get ventilation. Fans start as soon as the door opens for safety purposes. I think that's the end of my show right there. That's pretty much it. We've got just a few things, items left on the punch list out there, real minor stuff. Not a bunch. The house should be up by now. The three-sided house, but other than that, that's come around pretty well. Nice, it's nice work. So, question?
We have a VFD on that, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's good.
Yep, so what do you use the clay valve for if you have a VFD?
You're going to put me on the spot, aren't you, John? Well, the clay valve actually, when we run the waste, the clay valve actually comes on. It basically, we run the waste, and as it runs the waste and times out, it starts to close. After a certain time, it puts it slowly towards the system and shuts our waste off from the discharge pond, and it hits the system.
I just figured Dan could have lived without a clay valve, so he has to put
it in there. Any further questions? Okay, thank you, Terry.
Yep,
thank you. Appreciate you doing that. We'll go to item 4.6. Amy has a resolution and facility use agreement to discuss with us tonight.
Good evening. So we have a couple who would like to get married in Lions Park. So this is their facility use agreement and agenda item for this evening. So the Camacho, Pineda, and Diaz wedding shall take place on August 5th. They're planning for 250 guests, which puts this into a special event as opposed to a general park rental. They'll have a ceremony reception, and the reason that they chose Lions Park is because they love the natural setting that it is, and the Arboretum is where they'd like to have their wedding pictures taken. So they have requested to use shelter 2, 3, and 4 for their wedding and their guests, which butts up to the Arboretum. There's not going to be a dance. There'd be a small amp for, you know, music at the reception and the minister to speak into a microphone so all the guests can hear. The only other special, I guess, accommodations that they've requested to be made are that the grass isn't watered the day before, so it's not wet during the event, and that it's mowed also not the day before, so that any little, you know, shreds of grass are left behind can get cleaned up, so they don't have to worry about that. I've scheduled both of those things with my crew pending you guys approve this evening, and that doesn't really change the general plan very much. So
any questions?
I've got one.
Yes,
Amy, what I see the time on here, 6 in the morning to 11 at night. Is this 11 at night, is that extending it? Or is that what the city's deal is, that
the park anything in there?
I was just thinking of the neighbors and everything else,
yeah,
with the music and all that good stuff.
Their 11 o'clock at night is actually, I just went to the park's extent, so uh-huh. Their event will actually take place between 2 or from 11 o'clock to 6 o'clock during the day.
Uh-huh.
from 6 o'clock to 11 o'clock, they'll be cleaning up. And I don't anticipate, nor do they anticipate, that the cleanup should take 5 hours. I just wanted to make sure that they had the ability to be in the park.
Thank you.
This is on a Saturday?
Yeah, no, this is on a Friday.
On a Friday.
They were wishing to have it on a Saturday, but there's somebody else that had already rented the facility. And I tried to move them to Kiwanis, but they're very, very set on the Arboretum, so.
Okay.
What would the cost be to rent those three?
To rent those three shelters all day would be more than the cost for the special event.
But under a special event, you can actually give them all three?
Under a special event, I can actually give them the whole park. However, when we're filling out the application together, I ask them specifically, every group that comes in, specifically what they're looking to have, so that way we don't have to eliminate those park shelters for other people's reservations. So for an example of one that takes all of the park shelters would be the 4th of July.
Yeah.
It's an exceptionally large event that's, you know, thousands of people. So in this particular instance, they just wanted those other two shelters, mostly so that other people weren't terribly close to their event. More of a privacy buffer than anything else, I believe, in this instance.
Since it's on a Friday, you said what time was it going to be done?
Their cleanup can... It is 10 o'clock on a Friday, and I will make sure that...
I was going to say, are we going to have a special crew come out for garbage detail, or...?
They're responsible for their own garbage per their contract, yes. The only thing the city is responsible for is disposing of their garbage, and since we have the temporary staff of the Parks and Rec crew, we have 7 days a week parks crew in to empty those containers and make sure that everything is ready for any other events that weekend.
And that was my concern, is that if things did not get picked up the way we want them picked up, then it won't be sitting there the whole weekend.
That would be taken care of, yes. The guys will go out in the morning and make sure the facility is back to what it should be.
Well, as somebody from the park committee, I'd make the recommendation that the city council approve the resolution.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
Can I say one more thing before?
We're going to vote on this, and I'll let you say. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now take it away.
I just wanted to let you guys know that this last weekend we had a baseball tournament here in town. We had 15 teams from all over the state here for a 12U boys baseball tournament. The city ran the concession stand at the park this weekend, and we sold over $1,400 worth of concessions in the 2 days that we were open for the event. And mostly the reason that I'm bringing this up is not just myself, but there were four gentlemen that were there with me that are employees of Public Works, and we all received multiple comments from all sorts of different people, the tournament director, parents, coaches, everybody, saying how the facility was ran well, kept well, the concession stand was clean and friendly. They didn't have to ask for anything the whole time they were there. We had people from Moses Lake saying that they would rather play here any day than play in Moses Lake with the kind of environment that we were able to provide for them. And I guess it just meant a lot to me to hear them say that, because we didn't set out to just exceed anybody's expectations this weekend. We just came to do the job that we always do every day. And it was just very nice to hear the praise from people who had really no reason to say anything kind other than just feeling compelled to do so. And this is the second tournament that the Sports Forum has held here in Othello. The first one, they used two fields, and they actually rearranged their schedule to allow four fields to be used down here, because their first experience a month and a half ago was also so good that they didn't want to just rent the two fields. So they were looking to rearrange their schedule again for their last Moses Lake tournament to feed us some overflow and host another tournament here because of the work that we've been able to do for them. So I know it's kind of off topic. I just wanted to take a chance to say that people recognize all the hard work that you guys are allowing us to do. And so I share that with you.
Good job.
Thank you.
We talked about it in committee, that you would get in there and run that. So that was a good thing.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that was a quick turnaround. But
let me add one thing. Quick turnaround. With 2 days' notice, Amy and the staff down there at Public Works got that concession stand cleaned up, and it was a mess, by the way, from the previous occupiers. Got it stocked, got it staffed, and oh, by the way, Saturday was, guess what? Pool opening day as well. So hats off to the Public Works staff and Amy, and for a job really well done.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
Thanks, Dave.
Yes. So now as we move on in our agenda, we'll move to item 4.7, and I want to ask Rigo Ozuna to come. Has everybody on the council met Rigo? He's our new IT director. Okay, well, good. Rigo, you have a presentation for us, and you can introduce yourself and to the council, and you've got some new ideas for us, so
yes.
Why don't you take it away?
Good evening, council. So I'm, like the mayor said, my name is Rodrigo Zuna. A little bit about myself, I was born and raised here in the city of Othello. I love this place. You know, I can't say enough about it. And I should check off. I wish they would have had our 9-year-old tournament here, because we've ended up playing in Mozambique this past weekend. But I'm born and raised here. I went to Washington State University, where I got my BA in Business Administration with an emphasis in Management Information System. I worked at CVHA following my graduation from WSU. I worked there for almost 11 years as a systems engineer. And then I started working here for the city of Othello this past April. When I arrived, as you can see, there was a long list of issues here. This is one of the majors, the major issues that I faced when I came to the city of Othello. Here, the very top one is the most important one that I saw first starting out. Active directory and group policy was not replicated between the city side and the police department. What this caused was a lot of issues with emails, with user accounts being changed, and so forth. When I came here, I ended up fixing that, and now both sides are able to talk to each other, and everybody seems to be happy about it. Also, too, one of the servers that we had here, it's called Windows Update Servers. What that allows the server to do is actually push these updates out to the computers just to make sure that they are secure with the most recent Windows updates. That wasn't working when I got here, and now it is. We also had issues with the cameras at Lions Park and the water tower. I guess they've been down for quite a while. I ended up fixing that as well. Also, too, a lot of the stuff that are also on this list was basically there was no documentation, no network design, no infrastructure design. I basically came in here walking blind. With that said, though, all this list had been completed. The current projects that I'm currently working on is when I first got here as well, I inherited a voice over IP phone system that was initially only half set up. With this, what we're end up doing is that we're in the talks with CenturyLink to bring another internet line in here where we're able to actually fully make this place a voice over IP. The way it was currently set up from the previous IT person is that the current internet that we have does not provide certain features that will allow for good quality phone conversations to come through our phone. With CenturyLink, this would provide that good quality of service. We're also, you know, I'm not sure if you guys heard about the new website for the city that we're in the process of developing. We had our first initial meeting. I thought it went really well. We had some new ideas. We had things that we liked, things we didn't like, and so forth. So I think the second step now is to get some council members involved to see what your guys' inputs are. Because my initial thought is let's first have these internal meetings before we do the kickoff meeting with the company that is doing our website. Because I'm not sure if y'all know, but as soon as we start the kickoff meeting with that company, we have about 90 days to complete the process of the new website. So I figured let's just go ahead and get all our stuff together and be able to present it to them and get it completed as soon as possible.
Is there any council members that want to be on part of that? Or, okay, Gina, anyone else? Okay. I might like to be involved.
Okay. So basically what we're looking for is, for this website, is your guys' ideas on how to improve it. I had the opportunity to come as an outside perspective on it. I've never seen the Othello website the way it was until I started working here. I never visited the site. But when I looked at it, I mean, there were some things that I thought definitely we can improve on, you know, some frequently used links, some, you know, stuff that can be moved around, make it a lot more user-friendly. And so what I was kind of hoping for is kind of getting members who are not, I guess is a bad way to say it, not computer savvy, that would be able to, you know, oh, this is easy, this is easy. Yeah, you know. I was hoping you would raise your hand.
I'd love to be on that committee, but I'd be
okay.
So, but I understand now what you're saying, because that other person who was in there must have fouled me up because I couldn't get it to work.
Yeah, so that was my...
That had to be it.
So that was our thought, is get you guys involved and to help us with the designing of that.
User-friendly.
And be user-friendly, exactly.
Perfect.
I'm also working with the police department on this sector and insight project that they have going. And the last thing I'm going to talk about, and it's the majority of the rest of my slide, is the infrastructure and the network design. That's what I've been working on as well. So, as I mentioned before, we didn't have a network design, but now we do. This is the way we are currently set up, where we have the wastewater treatment plant, and we also have the public pool, not on our network at all. So right now we're just basically there with an internet line for them to have internet access. And so Amy has to run back and forth to the pool to, you know, to go and give them documents and so forth. Wastewater treatment plant, they really had no backup system. You have to run out there. Well, I had to run out there and go back up their information. So what the future design will look like is kind of a, everything is going to come straight to this building. So if you would, I'm not sure which one's better. So on this side here, we'll have a router from the public pool that will hit the internet into a what is called a VPN tunnel. It's a virtual private network into our router that will hit our servers. What this will allow the public pool to do is that if they have any documents that there are, you know, forms that they want signed and so forth, they can actually save it to the computer and upload it to our servers where we'll get backed up. Same thing with the wastewater treatment plant. Is the exact same thing with them. We'll create a site-to-site VPN where they can go ahead and store their data instead of having me run out there once a week to go back up on a little thumb drive and bring it back to our servers. So that's the design of the network that we're kind of hoping for here in the future. Make it a lot more easy for everybody to access the information that they need. This is the fun part. This is our current server environment. Okay. These are not our server names. I just did that for security purposes in case there were citizens here and didn't want them to know what our server names were called. But here, as you can see, we have four hosts in our environment that I know of. Because, like I said, there's no documentation at all. So what we have here is that we have a bunch of these virtual guest servers that are stored on what's called local disk. This is not best practice at all. And stuff. So what happens here, and this is the question I have for you guys. What happens if one of these hosts go down? As I marked as an X on this one, you lose the other three servers that are attached to it. And actually, this is not something I just made up. This actually happened 2 weeks ago. We actually had a server go down where we were, you know, luckily I came in the morning and I was able to fix it, you know, without causing too much of a headache for the administrative staff to work. But basically, this server here had a network card go bad. And so we couldn't access anything. And when I talk about the everything server, that's what it actually does. It does everything. It hosts your emails, your user accounts, your IP addresses and so forth for your computers. And that went down. And so luckily, once I diagnosed the problem, I was able to fix that network card and get everything back up and running within probably 35 minutes or so. The feature design that I was hoping would get approval, not, I just have to go through it right now or anything like that, but this is kind of design that, you know, that I'm more accustomed to. This is redundant data here that we'll have. So basically we can fit the current servers that we have into two hosts, two bigger hosts, with what's called a SAN storage. All right, so basically what would happen is that you'll have these two servers here and you'll have this, the SAN storage that's right there, where all the data and all the hard drives for their servers will be stored here with two backup controllers in case one controller fails. You don't see nothing. Nobody knows it's a blip. So So now the same question happens, is that what happens if a host goes down? Nothing. The host goes down, everything migrates seamlessly over to the other server. Nobody knows an issue. I get an email kicked off to me saying that the server went down, I can fix it, and nobody has a problem. And then what happens after that, when the server comes back up, we can go ahead and push those servers back to its parent server. Nobody notices anything. And everybody asks, what's the cost? That's always a big question, right? Well, when looking at this, I kind of compared it between having it in the cloud or having it on site. So the thing with having things on the cloud is that they like to price things based off of server allocation. So for instance, if you have a server that has what they're called central processing units, they charge you per processing unit that you have on that server. So for instance, our Everything server that has six processors in there, six central processing units, they charge you a certain dollar amount per processor. Now you have to look at the memory of the computer and so forth. So everything basically starts adding up. The initial price from all the servers that I found was about $2,500 a month for the foreseeable future. And that's what it would cost, plus a backup internet line, because they want you to be redundant, so that way your guys are always constantly up. To have it on site, and I did some initial price gathering for us. It came around $45,000 for it, but what this will do, they'll give us a payment option for it, by the way, either pay it all at once or pay it on a monthly plan. What this will include is two of the HP servers that you kind of saw there on the design and stuff that will handle all of our servers. And what will happen too is if one of the server dies, one server will handle everything. So until I can get that on back up. It'll come with an actual network switch that will connect the SAN to all the servers. And then it'll come with a 5-year HP support next business day. So basically you'll pay that price. The initial estimate that we got was $815 a month for the next 5 years. So basically, you know, to pay that all off, the $45,000. But you have support the whole time. And so, I think it's a great thing to have, because you never know when a server goes down, the hard drive goes down. It's always nice to get something the next day where you can just pop it in, it rebuilds itself. And it also includes all of our Windows licenses to be compliant. So.
So we're buying this option from somebody in particular?
I just went out there and with some people that I used to work with, vendors that I used to, you know, have contacts with back in my days at CBHA. And so this is the initial price tag that they told me about. And so I didn't commit to them or anything like that. I just wanted a rough estimate to present to you guys on what it might cost. Now, this is the bare minimum, right? So this is like the cheapest avenue here. If we really want really good equipment, you know, the SAN that I was currently looking at, it's called Pure Storage. It's a really good software, really good hardware. And what Pure Storage allows you to do is that over a course of 10 years, if anything that they do change-wise, when it comes to, you know, a controller, hard drives, and so forth, they will automatically replace it for free. So you'll get 10 years out of your SAN. No problem, no questions asked. Because they want everything to be current. So that way their tech support can offer the best customer service possible.
Okay, slow down a little bit because I'm getting confused.
Okay.
So we make an initial payout of $45,000 and we're going to buy two HP servers, one HP network switch, 5 years, and we're going to get 5 years of support.
Yes.
And Windows OS licenses.
Mm-hmm.
But in that 5 years for support, we've got a monthly payment of $850.
No, it's
a payment all at once or break it down to the...
So there's no other issue? There's no other
No. And there might be another fee for a professional service to help me set this all up, because it is a lot of work, and if we need to get this up quickly, I would need some help with it. So
between the two, between cloud and on-site, which one do you lean towards?
I was leaning more towards on-premise, just for the fact that if we go with the monthly payments, it will be a lot cheaper than paying the $2,500 a month, or as much as 3,000, just because the other day I just found out we have another virtual machine server. I think it was one of our camera servers that we had out there that I didn't know about. So right now the servers that I spec'd out for on-premise and stuff will handle the servers that I find. I don't think we have that many more servers that I don't know about. If anything, there's probably one or two more, but these servers will handle it. So, and this is what you'll see up front.
And we'd have to go out for bid with that price.
No, this is just the
level. So we are paying $2,500 a month right now?
No, we're not.
No, that's what if we go to the cloud.
That's if we go to the cloud. If we say, let's scrap all this and let's just do cloud and just forget about it, we never have to worry about hardware again, never have to worry about, failover or anything like that. If that's the route we want to go, I'm okay with it. I just figured that for the money, and since you guys have me, I'll be able to maintain it for you guys at a cheaper price.
So what's the price difference to upgrade to a 10-year for $45,000?
For that equipment that I was talking about, Pure Storage, that SAN alone is only $50,000. So basically you would have to purchase the two HP servers and the HP network switch separately.
So it gives up to what, more or less?
Without having numbers in front of you, I'm estimating maybe 70-ish, 75. Yeah, 70,000, 75.
10 years?
I believe that's what they said. I can verify for the next meeting or something.
We're leaning towards that already, I think.
Because under your experience, I know from my experience, what was your updating? How many, at CBHA, how often did you update your...
We had our servers, it was either, depending on how important the server was, on a 3 to 5 year plan. And so, but that was full, next business day, no matter what happened to that server, it would always get replaced. That's what we had there. The SAN storage wise, I believe it was the same, we had an HP SAN storage there, that was on a 5 year plan. And I think that's coming up for them as well. That's what we face right now.
I was going to say, if you go with the 10-year plan, that would still be, we'd still be able to do the monthly payments?
Not with them. It depends. Because the people that I've talked to that gave this payment plan, they also sell that equipment as well. When I talked to Pure Storage, that was talking directly to Pure Storage. This was through a what's called a VAR. And they're the ones that gave me this payment plan for HP. So if I go with them, they might give me a payment plan as well. I don't know.
I would like to make a suggestion.
Sure.
If I can get an accord from Spencer, is that I would prefer us to do an interfund loan, like from our water sewer fund, and loan the general expense fund, the 70 or the 45, so that way we pay ourselves back the interest rather than making monthly payments and paying interest to an outside party. We could do make monthly payments, but
we could do that. What I would suggest is this is something that each one of our funds is going to benefit from: our general fund, street, water, sewer, solid waste, all five of those, and we can divide it by those five. And ultimately, the impact for one fund won't really be of a lot.
Okay.
Good.
Make it happen.
Yeah, so maybe in 2 weeks you could come back with a firm proposal
with
Spencer on how we can divide that up and pay for it.
Sure.
Because I think I'm just thrilled, since you've got here, the progress you've continued to make, and it's steady and it's visible here now, we're just, I guess, being moved into the new century, mm-hmm. finally. And so, I'm just really pleased, Rigo, with your progress and what doing. And I think we want to give you the tools to help us get better. Mm-hmm. And we do need to get better, because I think as you look at these future projects, you want to go over those.
Yeah, so basically what we have right now, future-wise, since everything is it's called a virtual machine, a guest on a host, it'd be nice to have some backup software to back it up in case something was to happen to the operating system. We're able to retrieve that same server back from a backup. We currently have a software in place that the other IT person had. I'm not sure how viable it is. I've never seen it before. I've never really played around. I've restored some data off of it, but a lot of the data was locked, so I don't know if it's working properly or not. So there are several products out there that could help with this. You know, you got the really expensive ones, or you can probably go as cheap as what, you know, the last one the person went with. I'm trying to find a viable option, but like I said, this is for the future. I don't see anything currently happening in our logs right now that will cause the server to have an issue, but it's computers, right? Anything can happen. So that's one thing that I'm looking at in the future for us, to make sure that we are redundant with everything. Because I know you guys lost some data in the past, and it's not good. So
they don't back up the server every night here?
Yeah. Well, the software that he has is doing that, and like I said, there's some data that I was able to restore, and some that I wasn't when I was trying to recover some of his files that he had removed from the computer before he left. And so I was trying to recover some of those, and I restored half. I couldn't restore the other half because it said it was locked by, because he must have had it open while it did its backup. So another one is called Office 365, or a key management server. And what this will allow us to do, this would allow us to go half and half, basically. So Office 365 allows you to host your email server in the cloud. The initial cost right now is $5 per user. And I think we have 35-ish that actually use email. So you're probably looking at $190 a month or $200 a month to host it. What this will do is that it will keep everything current. You know, right now we're on Exchange 2007, which is coming end of life by the end of this year. If you were to actually separate that out and upgrade it out ourselves, it's really, really expensive. I don't recommend that. And we're small. We don't need to have it here. It can be hosted somewhere else. Everything's backed up there as well. So, and what this key management server will do for us is that right now, the way we're purchasing items when it comes to using Microsoft Office is not that great. Right now, we're just buying a standard home version of Microsoft Office. And if you accidentally lose the key and your computer crashes, you're done. You have to buy a different license. What this key management server will allow you to do is buy volume licenses. And so we can control everything from the server and say, okay, the mayor has a license. Wade has a license. Spencer has a license. Now Spencer's computer crashed. Fine, give me that license. We can tell the server to grab that license back from his crashed computer, and then now when we stand up a new one, we can, hey, there you go, your license is back to your computer. We don't have to retain any folders or files or CDs or anything like that. Everything is kept with us.
So you get a proprietary Windows and a proprietary...
Yeah, all that stuff we can keep the volume.
It's proprietary to the city, and you can use it to load your computers?
For the city employees, yeah. Instead of constantly buying one, like I recently had to purchase one for the police department and stuff. It was another $100, you know. If anything happens at an MDT, you know, right now I'm finally keeping a log that says, okay, MDT6 has this license. So if MDT6 was to crash, I can reinstall Windows and put that same license there.
So what operating version are we on right now?
We're in a mixed environment right now. We have half Windows 7 and half Windows 10. So eventually everything will have to eventually get to Windows 10.
11 is already out there. You should probably, I don't know if you've instructed him to or not, but get a tally of what we have. We should set up a budget, an ongoing budget within the administration costs of the general fund or whatever, that would continue to update the computer system for this city. If the police department needed 5 new computers every year, if the administration needed 5 new computers, we should have a budget set up to continually.
Yeah, you can.
There should be a cycle.
You actually jumped ahead of me right there. I have a server and PC replacement plan.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm planning on doing as well. But I wanted to bring up the key management server because I think that's going to help us out a lot on not having this waste money on buying licenses over and over again where we can just control a volume license. So I also here I want to develop a disposal plan of old hardware. What we will do there is, you know, we'll strip out the hard drives, you know, send them off to either go get destroyed, or we can destroy them ourselves. And then, you know, we can, you know, use the thrift store or something out there that will take old computer systems, and they do what they do over there. That's what we used to do at CDHA. We used to take everything that we had, computers or servers, strip out the drives, send them out to the thrift store. I guess they get some kind of money for recycling them or something to help out at least a store in town. So,
nice.
And then camera hardware upgrade. I believe the police department is in dire need to upgrade some of their cameras that are still black and white and fuzzy and so forth in key areas of the building. That's something I would like to get a handle on here in the future as well.
So if there's any future areas that you want to get covered, think about that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is there any other questions?
The camera on Lions Park and 14th, Terry, is that the one we were talking about in our last meeting? That wasn't working, that Regal says that is working now?
Yeah, 14th and the water tower.
Yeah.
I remember Lions. And then they got one CHS that's down, but they're doing remodels in their building. They had run a circuit for it and completed the circuit.
Is that the same camera we're talking about that faces the bathrooms?
Yeah.
So it's working now?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
So now, yeah, we can also see out towards, I think, Highway 26, right? From the 14th Avenue Water Tower? I think that's where it goes. Somewhere in that area. Yeah, but those both towers are working now. So we're good there.
So, Rigo, appreciate your effort. I think the council would like you to prepare some kind of a proposal in conjunction with Spencer in 2 weeks so that they can take some action.
Okay, yeah. I actually.
Yeah, but with the 10-year, yeah. But.
Yeah, and actually have those guys from Pierce Storage. They're actually coming on site tomorrow to take a look at our environment and see where they can help. So
that sounds great. Really appreciate the progress.
Thank you. Have to put that out for bid, or you can do that for now.
That price, money, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How much money would have to go out to bid?
Okay. Unless it's sole source. You know, there's nobody else has a capability, but there's so many companies.
Yeah, that Pure Story is a proprietary software, so it's, I don't think there's anybody else that has that kind of software. But I'll do my due diligence. I'll look around. I know this is new to me. I'm going out for bid. So before, you know, we had.
If so, would you let Wade and Spencer and Kelly guide you through that part of the process?
Awesome.
Okay.
Sweet.
Terrific.
All right. Thanks,
appreciate
sir.
It. Thank you.
We actually brought this to council of the budget, and one of the things that we got very quickly for money issues. But Rigo done for the police department's computers last week, and 2/3 of the PCs have already been certified. So we know that we've got some replacements, and I'm actually quite asking to get that full with some of this, so we're gonna have to bring that budget time because structuring and how we're doing is actually a really good idea.
Yeah, I'm actually, I have the numbers in my head, actually. Out of the 15 computers that were there, 4 of them are only in warranty. The rest of them are out of life. So we have 11 of them that need to be replaced. Because right now, if that computer was to die, we can't get Dell support or anything to come and help.
Are you having issues with dropped? I mean, they show up in a call and their computer goes dead?
No, the NDCs that we actually have, we've taken all the old computers out off the road.
Yeah,
the old laptops. And that's kind of a waste because they all had licensing on them for the occupied that you can't use. But we have 6 NDCs that we actually are hotspotting through the cards. As we come back to council for the budget, I'm just coming here and ask for the rest of those so that every car will have them so we're not putting them in and out of cars because we have a lot of wear and tear. But we standardized the parents on the top book, which is, I'll bring them in and show them sometime, but they're very tough computers, cellular bubbles in, and even for the hard drive, and it's just made to be in a car. So the flip side of that is they're coming back to the bus piece, so very, very expensive. And actually, that $5,000 donation that we got when we approved a couple of weeks ago, that's buying 2 more.
How many more do you need?
6 to 8. executives, we've just been very challenged. We've seen it every day.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Rigo.
Rigo, if you ever need any help, just you know how to get a hold of me.
I'll see you at the golf course.
Thank you, Rigo.
Thank you.
So now we'll move to item 4.9, resolution to grant a, 4.8, I'm skipping ahead, amendment to contract with Aspect Consulting. Wade?
Yeah, Mayor, Council, as you saw from the agenda memo, and that we're trying to get a, what we got in a grant for $180,000. Just to put in context, the, you know, we're looking at a plan for the city to make sure we have water both now and 5 years from now and 30 or 40 years from now. And part of that plan for the long term is looking at this ASR and see if it's really a viable concept for the city of Othello. Working with Tim Flynn and Aspect Consulting, going along the ASR line, we think that we can do it that way, but it's a long process. It can take between 7, 8, 9, even 10 years, but it only starts when you actually start. So we've started, and the first big step now is to do a real feasibility study for ASR. And so the Department of Ecology here in the state, in conjunction with also Columbia River, has these grants that do feasibility studies for ASR, and with the help of Tim Flynn and Aspect Consulting, we went out to get this grant, worked with them, and lo and behold, they granted it to us. So it's pass-through money. They'll pay it to us, and we'll write checks to Aspect. There's a complete plan on your board docs there that Tim Flynn had to put together to submit for the grant, and that's what we'll be looking at as we go along there. The primary, well, that page is in print, and all the different objectives of the grant. But basically, it's to make sure that we can, it makes sense for us to do it. It looks at the pilot study that we do, not, we won't do the pilot study, but look at how we would do it and develop a plan for the pilot study. We'll go out for another grant for the pilot study. But for now, what we need is council approval, basically, to accept this $180,000 to go out and look for that the ASR project is indeed viable for the city of Othello. Questions?
Council?
No. I'll make the motion.
Second.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Wade. We're on our way to working towards resolving these water issues. Now we're going to move to item 4.0.
Do we need a motion to authorize the city to accept that contract?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Spencer.
Two motions?
So what was the motion?
To authorize the signing of the amendment.
The amendment to the contract, yes. There was two things there. Sorry, my bad.
There is a two-step process here?
Yeah, it's to accept the money and then also to sign the amendment to the existing Aspect contract.
So what did we do?
Yeah, about that. Thanks, Spencer.
Move to authorize the city to sign the grant agreement with Aspect Consulting for the ASR feasibility study.
So that's the one we did.
That's one we just did. Okay, okay, so now we need a motion to accept the $180,000 grant.
You did that already.
No.
Okay, sorry.
We did the other one. Now we're going to do this one.
Okay.
So, yes. I'll second that.
Okay. Are we?
Mark.
Second by Gina. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. So now we're going to move to item 4.9, a resolution to grant a variance, which we had quite a discussion at our last meeting with Avista. And Kelly, you have had a chance to review that variance.
I did. Well, I drafted the resolution, forwarded it to Wade. Wade was able to work with Avista, and they approved the language that we've included in the variance.
Okay, so the language in there, you're comfortable with it?
I am. I wrote it. Okay. So I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah. Okay, tonight. Okay.
If I wasn't, we would have a problem.
So rather than reviewing a work product, you generated this one, huh?
This is correct. Okay. This is my work.
Very
I feel pretty good.
Good
about it.
Council? Need a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Oh, second.
to approve this resolution for the Avista variance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Item 4.10, panhandling ordinance. Chief?
I'll try to make this one as easy as possible, Mayor and Council. We had a request to put together some form of panhandling ordinance. We have nothing on the books as it is. I went out and did some research, found a couple samples. Oak Harbor and Puyallup are where I plagiarized the majority of this from, trying to pull the different pieces that I thought would accomplish what we're trying to do here. What generally the First Amendment prohibits us from banning panhandling. But what we can do is we can limit it, and we can try to make it as safe as possible for our community members. So in this case, and I'll just kind of hit some of the highlights of what we tried to do here, we wanted to prohibit panhandling around certain areas where people would have cash in hand, ATMs, payphones, gas pumps, car, since we have the new car wash, car washes, any place that you've got your money in your wallet out. We wanted to make it so a panhandler can't be standing there. Now, the other thing that we did in this was we're able to limit the hours that it's doing. So we said basically sunrise to sunset is the only time they can do it. Now, the other piece is you've seen some of the panhandlers around where they'll block the street or they'll step out into the road. I'm sorry, block the sidewalk or step out into the road. This prohibits that. So basically what that falls by definition is aggressive panhandling, and that's where they're getting pushy and they won't take no for an answer. This ordinance is designed to allow us to enforce against that activity. So at this point, any questions?
I got one. So say, like up at the car wash, so right now he could be up on the sidewalk and panhandle right in front of the car wash, correct?
Yes, theoretically, yes, sir. Daytime.
So as long as he's on the sidewalk, but if he comes on the property.
That would be coming onto private property, and there's actually a section where we address private property. So, and the fact that he can't come onto the car wash between, I think we said 15 minutes, so within 15 minutes of your washing the car. So I built the 15 minutes in so that people could actually take the time to dry their car and not be bothered by a panhandler while they're drying their car. Some of these other activities, we put 5-minute timelines, ATM, 5 minutes after you take your money. So most people are already in their car and have left, and that's why, with our attorney's recommendation, we implemented that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good, Council. Do you like this ordinance?
Any kind of ordinance.
Yeah. Anything that helps.
The penalty that, and the count, we're more than willing to take Council's recommendation on what the penalty is. I pulled the C8 because $260 felt about right.
We don't have any indigent laws anymore that work in the favor of the public.
So say that again. Any
indigent laws where people don't have anything, any money on them, they're indigent.
Yeah.
You know, they're out, panhandling and we don't have any laws like that anymore.
Well,
as a kid growing up, they didn't allow that.
Oh, really? No. Well, yeah, I think maybe what happened there is, it is a panhandling has come under First Amendment protection, under freedom of expression. So there's you can regulate it, but you can't ban it. So you can put reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions on it.
There used to be ordinances where people would have to have a certain amount of money in their pocket, which was an interesting approach to deal with it. There was loitering laws. Those are all gone. That's, again, a First Amendment issue. This is, we stayed with it. We colored between the lines on this to make sure we stayed as safe as possible.
Yeah. Well, the key to stay within the First Amendment is to make sure that there are adequate opportunities to engage in the behavior, engage in the expression. For lack of a better term, and I believe I looked at the ordinance. I mean, very few minor changes. I thought it was a good ordinance, but I do think it still leaves plenty of opportunity for panhandling within city limits, but does restrict it to areas where it is less of a public harm, you know, less of a nuisance.
We'll be able to use this in certain cases with some of the Walmart individuals that we see out there, where they're actually a chain, where they have a circuit that they work. When they're not here, they might be in Tri-Cities or Moses Lake, and they just keep the circuit going. If they're blocking the sidewalk, or they've set up a chair and a sign on the sidewalk so you can't walk by, that's a violation of this ordinance. So, you know, there are some things that we can do here.
Make a motion to adopt an ordinance creating Othello Municipal Code Chapter 8.28 titled Aggressive Panhandling Pedestrian Interference.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 5. Thank you, Chief. Is there any unfinished business to come before the council tonight?
I'd like to ask Terry a question. Rather ask Amy, but she's gone already. How's the skate park coming?
Good. They were taking off their first work that they done. It's got to be tarped for a week, so they've got a week on the very first part they started, so they'll be working on that section of it. Cars can order come in for the flat work, so they're starting to take off now.
This is like a harvest goal. Yes. Actually, Angel picked the code and left it up to him.
We did. If it's bad, you know, we're both at fault.
We're on the hook.
That was an easy one. That was good.
They had a design and a layout for the brickwork. It looked really good. And the colors, I believe, are going to be really nice.
Mm-hmm. Larry, you had a comment?
Well, I just want to thank Terry for pursuing this entryway to our building here. He had a little color chart, and I thought he did a good job on that. Of course, he was asking me, and I'm kind of... But he was out there, and he had a lady come by and said, "What color would you pick?" She picked the same one that him and I had both picked, so I think we got a color going to it. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Any other unfinished business?
I have a little bit.
Okay.
So here a few months ago, we approved to get an inspector from the county, and we're having some issues. According to Trish, we've been calling for inspections. Inspection is supposed to be done the next day. If it's a Friday, he don't work on a Friday. He emails him the address and what he's supposed to inspect, and he's not getting the inspections, according to him. So I called Trish today, because I want to know what the problem was. And she said, "Well, I talked to him, and I told him that I did send it." And she sent me proof that she did send it. Mm-hmm. So that's one. I mean, if he's not working on a Friday, we're falling behind. My guys didn't work on Thursday, because he didn't inspect it Thursday. Didn't work on Friday, didn't work on Saturday. Didn't work today. I got people that need to work, okay? Another issue is that we need to have open communication, you know, in this sense, is that if I have a pour at noon and you give me a timeline between 8 and 12 o'clock, it's okay if you can't get to it, but answer the call and let me know that you're not going to make it so I can stop that truck from coming. Well, Joel called him, and he pretty much told him, "Don't call me ever again." Well, that doesn't fly. That does not fly. So I called Tim, and I says, "Tim, why did you tell Joel never to call again? All we need is an open line of communication. Just say you're not going to make it. We call Central Washington. Do not mix that load. It's $1,000 on that load. And if they can't use that load elsewhere, well, it comes out of my pocket." Mm-hmm. So I don't know if he's overloaded. I know he's doing the county and he's doing the city, but it's not the first time. And according to the other builder, he addressed me here a few months ago. I did not bring it to council, and it was going on as well. So what I, you know, we need an open line of communication with him, you know, which I think I kind of made that clear to him, and he calmed down. But if we're not going to have inspections on a Friday, you know, well, inspection, we called at 9 a.m. I didn't get inspected, so my guys don't work Friday. And then here comes Monday, and you're not going to, you're not, you know, the guys are there to work, and you're not there till the end of the day. Well, I got guys that drove from Pasco, four guys that are working, drove from Pasco waiting around for an inspection. So I just wanted to bring that up to council.
Mayor, could I respectfully ask that if any council members have issues like this, they give staff a chance to work it, like, and if staff's not working it, then I would like to, and, you know, like to be aware of it. This is the first I've heard of this, and I would have taken care of this months ago if I'd been aware of it, Angel. So I respectfully ask that, you know, you bring it to my level first, and let me at least try and resolve these issues, because I thought Tim was doing a pretty good job until now. This is the first I've heard of these problems. So we'll take care of it, but please give us a chance to do it, okay?
Mayor, I got one other thing that I was concerned about. I was concerned about the ramp up here that we're doing for Dan Deaver, pouring of the concrete. I called, you were busy, and I talked to, I think I finally called you. I was concerned about, what I was concerned about is pouring concrete in 102 degree weather, because I know, I've been in the concrete business long enough, I know what it does. And we just end up with a big mess up there. So I went on up there myself, introduced myself to him, and started asking him a few questions about, do they have a sack mix, you know, so many five, six sack, do they, how wet they pour it, blah, blah, blah. I thought it came right out of a truck before the day that I went up there, which it does, and it comes out of a shotcrete machine. But anyway, it's a, what I found there, and kept talking to him, it was a seven sack pea gravel mix, and they're shotcreted on there. And I tell you, and then they had Bisqueen on there, which I had a couple of city people ask me, what's a Bisqueen for? I kind of had an idea what it was, but I give it to them. I said, okay, what's a Bisqueen for? That creates heat, sweat, and that cures that concrete. And what they were doing that day, they were hard troweling, and I'm telling you guys, it looked very good, really good. I was really, and I just told him, I asked him, I said, you mind if I come up here once in a while just to look? He said, absolutely not. But I was really concerned that we was going to get a big mess up there, you know, with that kind of temperature. Since then, it's cooled off, but they're doing a good job. And I'm going to keep visiting with them.
There you go. Thank you. All right. Any other unfinished business? Okay, I'll move to new business. Tomorrow night is the Lions Club annual auction at 6:30. If you guys want tickets, you can buy them at the door. Also, City Administrator Wade has tickets for sale.
Where's
it being held? To have the senior center. I've been the last number of years. It's a fun event. It's really good. Is there any other new business to come before the council tonight? All right. Hearing none, I'd like to adjourn tonight's meeting at 8:30 p.m.